Hello, and welcome to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Molly McAllister. You are tuned in and listening to our 20th episode of All Access Pass. So this is a big milestone for us, and it's very exciting for us to be doing our 20th show. Personally, I didn't really know if we'd ever get here when we started back in October, and the time seems to have just flown by completely. So for this week, we're surprising you. The last 2 weeks, well, other than Spencer's awesome music show last week, the 2 weeks before that, we were doing a two-part series on sexuality and disability. And we've actually come back and we are doing a surprise part three of sexuality and disability. And the majority of this week's episode is going to be highlighting an interview that Katie did last night with someone named Andrew Gerza. And he is representing his small new company called Deliciously Disabled. So you'll have that to look forward to in a couple minutes to hear their interview. But for now, we're going to start with a song. So I think we'll start you off with Dreamers, and this is Willa.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Nahid Jadavji, and we are broadcasting live from the unceded, ancestral, and traditional lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. That was Dreamers by Willa, and now we're going to listen to an interview that one of our members, Katie, had with Andrew Gerza from his company, Deliciously Disabled. Enjoy.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I can hear you perfectly. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, and it seems that your voice is getting picked up on our recording device, so that is great.
That's what we want to hear. Awesome.
So are you just coming from a photo shoot?
Yeah, I just did a photo shoot. I was asked to be part of a body positivity thing for the Toronto Star.
Are they featuring some sort of piece on body positivity?
Yeah, they're doing they haven't really told me much. They're just like, oh yeah, we're going to do something in a month about body positivity if we want representation. And I was like, all right. So I hopped it down there and was like, sure, I'll do it. So we took some photos, had a little interview, and then we were done.
Excellent. And it's a little late for you over in Toronto right now.
It's okay. It's 9 o'clock. You know, I'm a night owl, so it's not late late, but it's now that I've traveled, because I live just outside of the city, so because I traveled so far, I'm getting to the point where it's like, all right, yeah, that was a busy day. So,
yeah.
But, you know, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you as well. You are being recorded from UBC. We're on Musqueam First Nation territory over here, so we'll be opening up the show with that, and we are excited to have you here to be talking about the kinds of things that you're doing with Deliciously Disabled and all of the other work that you do.
Yeah, I'm very excited to share all that stuff with you guys.
So we were chatting with the members of our collective, and we've come up with a few questions that we want to ask you, and we'll put some of those out there and see how things go and see where the conversation takes us.
Awesome. I'm ready. So ready.
I am so ready as well. All right. So to start things off, why don't you tell us, if you would like to, a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Andrew Gerza. I am the founder of Deliciously Disabled, a brand that looks to talk about disability, not for what it could or should be, but for what it actually is in real time. So the work I do tends to tell the truth around disability. And my experience with disability has been that I'm a wheelchair user. I have cerebral palsy, and I'm 30. I'm going to be 32 in like 3 weeks.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you. I'm a Taurus, and I like 80s pop. That's a bit about me.
Nice. All right. And what motivated you to become a speaker on LGBTQ+ and disability issues, respectively?
What motivated me was the fact that I had no representation for myself. So it wasn't so much a want, it was a need. Somebody said something to me recently that's kind of resonated with me. If you're hungry, be the bread or something. This idea that if you don't see what you're hungry for, then make it yourself. So I was hungry for representation in my communities of disability, and I'm very proudly queer, but I didn't see myself represented, and I was getting kind of dejected and distressed by that, because for years as a young university student, I had tried to access queer spaces, and I just didn't feel welcome there. I wasn't unwelcome, but I certainly wasn't given space as a queer man with disabilities, so I decided that after a year of depression and a year of not really feeling very delicious about myself, that I was going to create a change. And so in 2013, I started talking, before I had the brand and before any of that came about, I just started talking about my experiences as a queer disabled man, and then it kind of grew from there.
How did those conversations start? Who did you start talking to and seeing those conversations grow into something more?
I started a little tiny, tiny blog, which not a lot of people read, but I started it for myself. I called it the Truth About Being Crippled, and I wrote just about my day-to-day experiences dealing with disability, and then slowly that intersected into being queer. And then when I realized that I liked writing down what I had to say, I contacted a Fab magazine in Toronto, a little queer outfit here, and I said, you know, do you have anybody doing disability stuff? Do you have anybody who is talking about that? And they said, no. Would you want to be featured as our cover boy of the month? And I was like, all right, well, that's cool. I've never at that point, I had never done a lot of media, so I jumped at the chance to do that. And I started with them, and they did a little feature on me, and then that it kind of snowballed, and then I realized that that's something that I wanted to do. So I branded myself a disability awareness consultant, and I then, from there, I started writing for HuffPost, and then from there, people saw my writing and were like, "You have a lot to say. Would you come talk about it?" And I thought, okay. And then so quickly it kind of snowballed, and now it is what it is.
That's really exciting. How just having a few conversations can grow into this bigger project where a lot of people have the opportunity to start talking about those things. And as an awareness consultant, as you say, you are raising awareness, and then you have something to consult people on.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I don't typically term. People have tried to say, "Oh, you're a great activist for disability," and I'll stop them and say, "No, I don't consider myself an activist." Because I don't want to, I mean, I do work on the fringes of what I think is activism, but I'm very apolitical. I don't want it to be about the politics. My goal is to talk about the emotionality and the lived experience as frankly and as freely as I can. So why I have termed myself an awareness consultant, a disability awareness consultant, is because I want to bring people into the conversation. And if I say that I'm an activist, some people tend to get a bit bristly around that.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like disability awareness consultant allows me to engage in a level of activism that isn't necessarily directly activism, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. And you've talked about how you didn't see that intersection between the queer and the disabled communities happening. How would you say that your experiences now have connected you to those communities, and how have you managed to bring those communities together through what you've been doing?
That's a loaded question, because I still feel like we're a bit fractured.
Yeah.
There are a lot of us who are queer and disabled doing similar work, but we don't know about each other until, I mean, the only reason we find out about each other is through social media. So social media has brought us together, and I've been able to connect with my community that way, through social media and through the internet. There's so many of us doing the same work, but I feel like we don't have a thing to connect us. So what I'm trying to do with Deliciously Disabled is to get everybody on board and make it a real big phenomenon so that everybody can be a part of it. And so that not only the disabled queer community, but the queer community in general can have a platform to ask questions about disability and to become a part of that community as well.
Yeah, and have you seen those things starting to happen through the networks that you've started building through this work?
Slowly. I mean, it's not happening as fast as I would like, and I think that the community has a lot of work to do, but I do think it is becoming more and more accepted. And I mean, we see people like Ryan O'Connell, who is an author and somebody who works in LA, talking about this stuff as a young disabled man in his 20s. He's kind of, you know, moving it along, myself and him and some other great people. Kaylee Trace here in Canada is doing great, great work out in Halifax with similar stuff. So it is coming about, but it's taking its time because people are still unsure of how to approach the topic.
Yeah. And would you say the topic is, how would you define the topic exactly that you're talking about, or what would you call it?
I would say people are uncomfortable discussing disability, particularly as frankly as I do, because I intersect with disability and sexuality.
Yeah.
And that's a whole new world for a lot of people. They're uncomfortable. We are generally uncomfortable about sex, and then throw in disability with that.
Yeah.
People go, okay, I don't know how to handle this. So, but typically around disability, people are very, very uncomfortable because we've been taught that it's not appropriate to talk about things, and it's not appropriate to bring it up because nobody wants to offend the disabled person. Whereas my thinking is you should bring it up and you should ask questions and you should, but there's an appropriate way to ask that doesn't hurt the person. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we were talking a bit about over the course of a couple of shows from 3 and 2 weeks ago, talking about that intersection of
disability and sexuality, and we read some anecdotal stories and looked at some anecdotal stories that we found on the web, and yeah, people, they don't really know how to respond. We looked at pregnancy and disability and the way that doctors and communities respond to individuals when they're when they have a disability and they're preparing to become parents or to give birth. And there are a lot of misconceptions and uncertainties surrounding those kind of topics. So it's exciting to hear that you are addressing them in such a direct way and in such a frank and approachable way.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm happy to be one of a handful of people that is trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so important that we take off our kid gloves when we deal with disability and start telling the truth. And so with Deliciously Disabled, I really, really try to make disability accessible to everyone. And what I mean by that is I want to tell the truth. I don't want to feed into stereotypes of disability. So I don't want to just have it be about how my life is so hard, how my life is so tragic, or I also don't want it to be about how I'm overcoming my disability,
mm-hmm.
I'm working past my disability. With Deliciously Disabled and the work that I do, I want to engage people in the idea that I'm living with my disability, I'm sitting with the reality of my disability, and I'm going to tell that story no matter what ends up happening about it. That's part of all of it, good, bad, you know, scary, different. It's all part of the narrative. And so when I tell these stories in a lecture or over social media, I'll hashtag, you know, at the end, Deliciously Disabled, even if it's something kind of about, you know, attending care or personal care or something somebody's not ready for. I hashtag that because that's the truth. And people need to start talking about the truth, and disabled people need to start telling their truth and their experiences more openly and not be afraid to do that.
I think I'm hearing a little bit from a few different pieces that you've touched upon about how you might have come to the name Deliciously Disabled. You've said that you weren't feeling super delicious about yourself at one point. You've talked about the idea of addressing living with a disability and not looking at kind of this a sad story of somebody with a disability or an inspiring hero tale of somebody with a disability, but just kind of embracing the reality of the situation. So do you want to talk a little bit about how the name came about?
Yeah, Deliciously Disabled. It's actually a really funny story how that came to be, because I was interviewed by Now Magazine back in early 2015 here in Toronto for their Love Your Body spread. I contacted them, and they were asking for Torontonians to go down to their studio and get naked just for their New Year Love Your Body stuff.
Nice.
And I emailed them and said, hey, this is really cool. Do you have anybody with a disability represented yet? And I just asked. I figured, you know, they might have found somebody. They said, no, we actually don't have anybody yet. And I said, cool, I would love to come down and do that. So I went down and I stripped naked, and I had all my special devices on, and I had all my, you know, my clothes were off and all that was done. And during the little piece they did about the shoot and who I am and why I do what I do, they said, how do you want us to describe you? And I'm a joker, and I like to, you know, make people laugh. So I said, oh, call me Deliciously Disabled. And I really didn't think anything of it. And so they printed it, and I, you know, I remember seeing it in print, going, oh, that's cool, whatever. And then as people started picking up the magazine when it came out, I got all my friends to hashtag, take a picture with it, with me, and hashtag Deliciously Disabled at the end. And I all of a sudden realized, I was like, wait, there's something here. There's a brand here. Like, I didn't realize it at the time because I had no idea what I was doing. But people were telling me, there's a brand here. You need to run with this. So I immediately was like, okay. So I just started using it everywhere. And then it caught on like wildfire, and it became mine. And then people knew me as the Deliciously Disabled guy. And so I ran with it.
I think that's a pretty great thing to be known as.
Yeah.
To have your thing be delicious in some capacity, I think that's pretty great.
Yeah, and I mean, it's fun because it's two words that you don't think are going to go together that I have brought together to discuss something that people are afraid to talk about. So I've used the wordplay with Deliciously Disabled to create a conversation piece.
Mm-hmm. So this is a very young brand then.
It's still a baby. It's in its year and a half infancy. It's really brand new.
So I was only just exposed recently to the website and to some of your social media within the last few weeks, I suppose, when we first got in touch. So how long have you been online as Deliciously Disabled Consulting?
Deliciously Disabled Consulting is really, really new. My business partner and I here in Toronto started that, the consulting part, I started the brand a year ago, because the consulting part's only been a few months. But I've been doing it, like I said, as an awareness consultant now on my own for 2.5 years. So really, the Deliciously Disabled part's only about a year and a half.
Okay, yeah, it's still very much a baby. So you were doing your consulting before it became a delicious sort of consulting, explicitly.
I was trying to be super professional, and I was like, I'm a disability awareness consultant. Here's what I will help you with. But then I realized, you know, I had something that I could play with. And now that I have the brand, I can do what I was doing before with a lot more power and a lot more impact, because they can attach it to what I'm doing, and they can see the relevance. And also, I mean, I created Deliciously Disabled because I wanted to bring these discussions into pop culture. I mean, I've been doing this in many different ways. I've been in, you know, magazines, and before all of that, I did One Girl Five Gays, that show on MTV in So I was doing everything that I could do to ensure that there was representation. I wasn't doing it to be famous or for, like, it was fun, but I did it with a very purposeful outcome in mind. I wanted to ensure that when Canada turned on their TVs or opened up their blogs or opened up somewhere, they were not bombarded, but there was consistent representation of disability in popular culture.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I feel like we're all kind of having the opportunity now to be a part of Deliciously Disabled becoming a bigger thing. You're still so young, and we get to talk about it in its early stages. Maybe a few years down the road, we'll be talking about how big and delicious everything has become.
There's a lot of awesome innuendo happening right there. but yeah, I mean, I think what I like about the brand, and what I consistently say, is that I don't know what I'm doing. I'm learning. It's a learning process for me. I don't want to pretend like I know everything, and I like that. I like the DIY element of what it is that I'm doing, and I like that people are just learning about it, and I like when people say, oh, I've never heard of it before, but now it's planting the seed of a different way to look at disability for a lot of people, and that is what's the most exciting for me.
Yeah, it's hard to forget once you've heard Deliciously Disabled. That's going to stick, and I think that as accidentally as you stumbled upon it, you definitely stumbled upon something quite fantastic when you did.
Yeah, I and it was quite by accident. I honestly didn't think that it would take off, but I'm really glad that I can use something. And you know, it's important to also mention that as people with disabilities, we typically tend to be underemployed. So to be able to create a brand where I can work for myself and, and be someone in a position of, no, I don't want to say power, because I don't want to pretend like I'm the one lording over everything, but somebody who's created something as a person with disabilities to elevate themselves out of the poverty that often comes with being disabled, I think is also really, really powerful. And so that's why I'm so proud of it, because it's given me a platform to work that doesn't follow the typical 9-to-5 model that so many people are kind of pushed into, and so I'm using my lived experience to create a career, and that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it really is super awesome, and pushed into 9-to-5, I think, is an appropriate phrase to describe how that work schedule works for most people.
Because so many people get pushed in, and I have done it. I did it for a long time, for 5 years. For 5 years for me was a long time.
It
was never something that I really enjoyed. And this gives me the flexibility and the freedom to live with a disability, because anybody with a disability will tell you that things happen unexpectedly that you have to deal with, and then you need help with it. So this allows for me to build a career, you know, over Skype, over email, over different technological platforms, that, or you know, go face to face when I have to, or go meet a potential client when I have to or want to, as opposed to having to be stuck to a timeline that doesn't work.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're living the dream in the eyes of many people that are listening, I'm sure.
Well, I hope that I am, and so I mean, I'm living my dream. I'm using what I know, my lived experience, to not only to educate others, but also educate myself in, you know, what disability really feels like. And that's awesome. I'm so proud of what it is that I've accomplished and what I can offer. But what I'm more proud of is what I can offer to the next generation of people in my position, so that the next generation of LGBTQ individuals with disabilities who are scouring and looking for role models and looking for somebody else to share their experiences with, or to draw from when they're coming out of the closet or feeling lonely or feeling like they have no representation, they can look at what I've done and say, okay, here's somebody who told their story. What can I do now because they paved the way? I really hope that Deliciously Disabled paves the way for the next generation.
And I have a feeling that it's going to do just that.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. You were just listening to the first half of an interview our collective member Katie did with Andrew Gersa yesterday, representing Deliciously Disabled. And we're going to be sharing the second half of that interview with you in a few more minutes. But we're going to send it to another song and take a break from speaking for a bit. Spencer's going to introduce the next song.
Here is Tapes by The Weather Station.
Oh, Every second Wednesday of the month from 6 to 9 is Women in Career Night at the Bike Kitchen. Bring your bike and give it some love in this safe and positive space for anyone who identifies as female or queer. Come learn how to fix your own bike with the help of a female or queer-identified mechanic and volunteers. Plus, there's free pizza. Visit bikecoop.ca for more information.
April Showers, Discorder Flowers, Devours is our cover artist, coming out strong with his new album, Late Bloomer. This issue also features Ashley Shadow's self-titled release, Kim Gray's Perfume, the latest on Late Spring, Karaoke at Pub 340, and more. We have album reviews of So Loki and Black Wizard, and live show reviews of Acid Mothers, Temples, and Daughters. Say
goodbye. Discorder is also reviving our old rant column as Hothead, a section dedicated to your honest feedback on the magazine and the scene we write about. Pick up a copy of Discorder magazine at your favorite local record store or retailer, or visit discorder.ca for a list of all our distribution locations. And if you want to get involved in Discorder, contact editor.discorder@citr.ca.
Want to go to a party with me?
No, the game's on.
Oh, I almost forgot. I'll be right there.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl.
Do you like sports and don't care who knows? Then CITR Sports needs you. If you like sports, are into radio, or generally just want to have a great time, then come join us. Email our sports coordinator at sports101@citr.ca to find out more, or come by the station in the new sub. See you soon. Watch, because I'm the man.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9. I'm Spencer Williams, and here is Ground and Grave by Aura Kogan.
You're tuned into All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Nahi Jalivji. And we're now going to be listening to our second part of our interview with Andrew Gerza, representing Deliciously Disabled, sharing some more laughs, some real talk, and some more information about some sex parties happening in Vancouver. Here's Andrew.
Now, a little bit more on the business side, thinking about people scouring the internet, looking for representation, looking for information. Can you tell us a little bit about the services that you offer at Deliciously Disabled?
Yeah, it's quite varied. We offer, and again, it isn't just myself, it's my business partner, Stella Palikarova. So there's two of us. I deal specifically with, you know, the queer stuff, and that's kind of my angle, and she works more in the female-identified women with disabilities angle. But what we offer is those two perspectives first, and then we offer, you know, accessibility audits. We offer lectures and talks around disability, and that's my bread and butter. Is I will align myself with community groups, universities. I was recently in Vancouver and I spoke with Health Initiative for Men in Vancouver and did a big talk for them. So I'll align myself with basically anybody who wants to listen to me talk about disability and bring them in and offer a 45 minute to an hour lecture for them. And then we can, you know, negotiate on pricing there. But the lecture is geared towards bringing disability into pop culture, bringing disability and sexuality to the group, to give them a chance to talk about how they feel about it. So I always ask the group halfway through, you know, tell me some of your thoughts. And I let them, they sit there nervously and go, well, I have thoughts about this. And so I let them, you know, share with me so we can have a conversation. And then other than the talks, I also offer, like, writing. I'll write for certain outlets and I'll offer, you know, my services that way. I run a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much about offering, like, financial stuff that people can pay for, but it's really pushing, and we do that with the talks and with some other things we do, but we also, you know, we offer really bringing the conversation into pop culture. So it's hard to say that it's hard to define exactly what we offer. We just want to continue the conversation of disability under the Deliciously Disabled banner.
Okay, and with your services and a couple of the different places that you've mentioned, how and where can people access your services? Can they do it from anywhere in Canada, depending on the nature of the service they're requesting?
They can do it anywhere from anywhere. They don't have to be in Canada. They can be in the U.S. They can be wherever they need to be. And because the beauty of this project and what we've strived to do is to make disability accessible. And anybody with a disability will tell you that everything becomes more accessible when you have internet access.
Yes.
So, I am quite popular. I almost said popular. That sounded really pompous of me. I am quite, what is the word? I'm very active on social media because that is where I got my blogging legs wet. So I'm very, very active on the Twitter. They can follow me on Deliciously Drew on Twitter. I'm very active everywhere. Or they just head on over to deliciouslydisabled.org. All of our services will be there. They can send us a request for services, like an email, and we can figure out what we can do for them. And they can also ask for just one of us, so myself or Stella, to come do a presentation, depending on what they're looking for. And we're happy to oblige. So we are fully accessible everywhere, but social media is where you can really reach me a lot.
Social media is the bomb, speaking as somebody that is super hooked on it, and how accessible it is to suddenly be connected to a whole bunch of people that share your interests and your passions, and you feel like you're a part of something that would not have been so easy to be a part of if we didn't have access to that. It's kind of magical and scary at the same time.
Totally. What I also enjoy about social media, especially with the blogs that I write, because I write quite heavily for having to post about these experiences with the hope of bringing these conversations again to pop culture, which is why I do the blog, because I think these conversations are important. But I love hearing the responses from the blog, and I like it especially when readers or listeners of my podcast will disagree with what I've with what I've suggested, because then it shows me where we are in real time when it comes to disability. What are people's real time views? Because everybody, typically when we deal with disability, nobody wants to say the wrong thing. So even if they have misgivings about it or they're uncomfortable, nobody will say that.
Mm-hmm.
If you post something on social media about disability or about something you think about that, everybody is quick to comment. And so when I post a blog and I get people that disagree with what I've said, I'm like, great. Now I know that I'll never be out of a job because these sentiments and these viewpoints and mentalities still exist.
Yeah, too true. And I think if we were all saying the exact same thing, then we might not be moving forward exactly, especially when this topic is kind of young in its representation in media and in discourse, even in more niche communities.
Yeah, I think we have to allow for some tension in this discussion. People are uncomfortable, and that's okay. I think what we need to do, though, is discuss why people are uncomfortable. Where does this discomfort stem from? And how do we not work through that, but how do we make it so that if you're uncomfortable, you can say, hey, Andrew, I see you're in a wheelchair. That's cool, but I'm also uncomfortable in the following ways because ABC. I feel like that narrative is okay, but I feel like we need to create a space for people to say that.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of a little bit of tension existing and topics that people treat as though they're taboo, we have caught wind of a party that might be happening for the second time this summer at some point. Is that correct?
Yes, you would be quite correct about that.
Could you tell our audience a little bit about what this party has been in the past and what it might be in the kind of discourse that has been happening around it?
Yeah, I can tell you what it was in the past. We are hosting the Deliciously Disabled Play Party, the Deliciously Disabled 2.0 Play Party, this August in Toronto. I don't want to give any more details because we're ironing things out, but it is happening in Toronto in August. And it is a sex-positive play party where people with disabilities are put at the forefront. So it is put on by my business partner and myself in partnership with a couple of other places, which I won't name right now because we're ironing things out.
Yeah.
But it's in partnership with a few other people. So the importance of the party is that it's not put on for people with disabilities. It's put on by two individuals with disabilities who understand the reality of disability. And this party is unique because it's the first sexually charged play. It was one of the first sexually charged play parties for people with disabilities in the world. So what this meant was that we had a space where individuals with disabilities could come in with, you know, their caregivers or their lovers or their partners, whatever it is, and engage in sex if they chose to and if it was consensual. And we had the equipment to help them do that. We had people, we had presentations, we had somebody from Vancouver. I don't know if you've heard of Brent Ray Fraser over there.
We'll have to look into that now that you've mentioned them.
He's an artist who paints with his very special paintbrush. I'm going to leave it at that.
Wow.
Yeah. So he does that, and he offered to come and do a very special performance for us. But it was a really important event because it really put sex and disability on the map, and it really made people look at sex and disability on its face in real time and really consider what that meant. And it was a fantastic event. I was overwhelmed by the responses that I got and the people coming up saying, you know, thank you for this. We needed an event like this in our community. Thank you. So it was, the first one was overwhelming. My Stella and I were completely overwhelmed. We didn't expect it to be what it was. We got interviews, requests from all over the world to ask us about this party because that people had termed it an orgy at the time. And so we ran with that and said, cool, call it that. We'll take your press. Great. So we you know, we did it, and we were able to really put sex and disability to the forefront and really make the ideas around sex and disability accessible to a wider audience and allow for individuals who have disabilities who may have never been able to access their sexuality, allow for them to feel like they were, this space was for them.
And what kind of feedback did you get after you received all of this press coverage from people in the communities where the media was covering you?
The press coverage was overwhelmingly positive. Of course, we had some dissenters, people who were like, I can't believe you're doing this. This is against blah, blah. Why are you having an orgy? I can't, like, people just didn't understand. And all we kept saying was, nobody's having any kind of orgy. We're just allowing people to enter a space where they can express themselves as they choose to. But the minute we advised them that sex could be happening on the premises, everybody freaked out. But generally, the response was positive, and it was, thank you for putting on an event that we sorely needed.
Yeah, that's really great. A lot of feedback from people that felt like they were seeing representation for themselves, I suppose.
I don't think it was some of that, yeah, but I don't think it was representation. I just think that they were, you know, and there was a lot of people there who were nervous. I remember the party itself. I was nervous. I'd never been to nor hosted a sex party. So here I was in the middle of all this going, I don't know what to do now. I have no idea. It was nervous. People were nervous because they didn't quite know how to process that. So I remember I was, you know, running around and seeing people with nervous looks on their faces just because they'd never been in a space where they could access their sexuality so freely, and nobody knew what to do.
Yeah.
That was kind of awesome because it allowed for them to explore something they may have denied themselves if they chose to. So it was really cool.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. And I am excited, especially with a lot of friends going off to that part of the world now that they're graduating or they're moving on to new things. And I will certainly be following along to find out more about the 2.0 party.
2.0. The theme this year is Justify My Love, Madonna from the early 90s. So it's going to be quite an event. We're actually, I'll give you a little tidbit. We're having our promotional photo shoot on Friday here in Toronto. So it's going to be quite the time.
And when can we expect to see some of those promotional photos?
Once they get developed, I'm guessing in about a week or two after the shots are done, we'll have something ready.
That's exciting.
So soon, very, very soon.
How are you feeling going into the second party? You said you were nervous the first time. Are you feeling nervous this time at all?
I'm always nervous because it's, you know, it's my baby. It's my brand. It's something that I have. It's a name that I've attached to a lot of things and I have a lot of pride in. And I never want to screw it up. So I'm always, I think any event planner or content creator will tell you that whenever they put their stuff out, regardless of what it is, whether it's a blog, a podcast, or a party, you're nervous because it's something that you held dear and now the world has access to it. And what do we do with that?
Yeah. Well, that's very exciting. And I think everybody listening here, especially members of our collective, will definitely be following along to learn more and watch the promotions as they come out.
As they, well, like I said, I'm a social media person, so it will be all over my social media, so you'll see it for sure.
So we will be all over that.
Amazing.
Since we are looking ahead right now in our conversation, what kind of goals do you have for Deliciously Disabled in a broader sense, beyond the 2.0 Madonna sex party? What other goals do you have for the brand and your project?
For the brand, I want it to become a global identifier for people. So when, you know, now we have like, oh, I'm LGBT, I'm queer, oh, I'm this. I want it to be, oh, hi, my name's Andrew, I'm Deliciously Disabled. I want it to be something that is all over pop culture in a way that is not necessarily positive or negative, but just honest. So I want people to take it and make it their own and do it and use it as something that gives them, that empowers them to see disability as they need to. I want it to be a global phenomenon. I mean, I know that sounds kind of like I'm taking over the world, but I want it to be, I want it to be something that we can, that is recognized I mean, I'm really, really proud of its DIY roots, but I think there's so much more that I can do with it. But I'm also proud of the way that it started because it's humbled me. It's not something that's, it hasn't made me so prideful that I can't see what I'm doing. I try to stay very connected to the roots of it and why it's important. And so I don't want to lose that. I want it to stay, I want it to grow, but I wanted also the roots of it to stay very, very much intact and very humbled.
Yeah. And thinking about that, I guess it's quite small right now in terms of your team and how well-known it is. It's starting to gain a bit of traction. One of our collective members was wondering if you have considered hiring or teaming up with more individuals to be a part of the Deliciously Disabled team to provide more diverse voices and points of view with regards to other identifiers for individuals, for example, race, class, and how those things might determine opportunities for differently abled people.
Yes. It's something we've talked about a little bit because it's only two of us right now.
Yeah.
We understand that we hold a lot of privilege, and so we also want to protect the brand. So we have to really talk about how to grow that, but it's certainly a conversation we're interested in having. We just have to figure out the right avenue to do that in. We can't, I'm very, very protective of it because I don't want to give too many pieces of it away.
Yeah.
Just yet, but I do understand that there are so many other voices. So while I am the kind of the founder, I want to be able to work with others in tandem with the brand, and as it grows, I'm sure we will grow and open up the collective, but we have to right now really, really protect it. But yes, there are others that we could certainly bring in. We just have to find the right avenue to do that.
And zooming back in a little bit from taking over the world, we were wondering, we've looked at a few different resources in Canada a little bit, maybe a little more specifically in Vancouver, with resources that touch upon the topics that we've been talking about here and the kind of topics that you're addressing. And you said that you've connected through social media and occasionally in person with other individuals that are looking to highlight disability justice in different ways. So what kind of resources have you discovered or do you know about, and what kind of areas of this topic do they focus on?
That's a good question. Like I said, there are so many. Kaylee Trace is somebody that I am quite excited by. She's an author and a sex educator. You may have heard the book Hot, Wet, and Shaking. She wrote it in 2014. About her experiences as a queer woman with disabilities. She's somebody who I greatly admire doing this work. Social justice, I'm trying to think who I know. There's so many people. In terms of resources, though, talking about this stuff, there's not a lot. There are not a lot of resources that are as frank as what I'm doing, unfortunately. And so we need to create resources with the voices of individuals with disabilities in mind, more so than for them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think that your Deliciously Disabled brand has stemmed from not being aware of resources that exist, that particularly with this intersection in mind between sexuality and gender identity and queerness and disability. And you're kind of hitting upon those things in a way that I personally haven't encountered too many other individuals doing, which is very exciting.
That is very exciting, and thank you for that. I think there are, and I know I kind of stumbled there when you asked me what resources I knew, but what that shows you is that there's not a lot that I could immediately draw from, because most of the resources that you were asking for just there are, you know, academic resources. And so I did 10 years of school studying disability. I could throw some academic names out there, but that's not going to stick. We need these names in pop culture. So my goal is to take what I've learned and parts of what I've learned within the 10 years of school that I studied, to then move that discussion into pop culture and create resources that way. So that's why part of the reason why I blog is so that there is a resource. Why I podcast is so that there is a resource, so that there is something that somebody can draw from later to discuss these issues.
Yeah.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. This is Molly McAllister. We're just about out of time for tonight's episodes. We have to cut that interview a little bit short for tonight. Up next on air is going to be UBC Arts on Air. And we want to remind you to turn your dials back to All Access Pass next Thursday at 5 o'clock. And you can also check out CITR.ca to hear the podcast for tonight's episode. Thanks again for listening. And we'll end with a song. Here is Easy to Read by Milk and Bone.
Welcome.